Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Carrie Adloyd. How do we grieve for someone? How does it change and evolve as we get older? My dad died when I was 15, and it took me many, many years to be able to express what I had gone through. So I decided to create Griefcast, a chance to talk, share and laugh about the weirdness of grief and death. But with comedians, so it's not that depressing, I promise. Each time I talk to a different comedian about their own personal experience of grief, as we remember someone that they have lost along the way. Whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club, this is a chance to talk about the peculiar human process of death. Welcome to Griefcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, enjoy isn't quite the right word, is it? If you appreciate the show, please do rate and review the podcast, or you can also rate and review your favourite episode as well, or even better, just tell someone you know who you think would appreciate it too. It's basically just me and my excellent editor Kate making this, so the more people who listen, the more episodes we can carry on making. So thank you so much if you've already done that and are fed up of me asking, and if you haven't, then please do, and I will buy you a biscuit. What biscuit would you like? I am happy to buy imaginary chocolate hobnobs for everyone. You're welcome. This week I'm talking to stand-up comedian Tom Ward. Tom is an award-winning comedian who appeared on Comedy Central's Live at the Comedy Store and is also currently supporting Joe Lycett on tour. He came in to talk to me last year about his dad, who died in 2006.
Welcome to Griefcast. I'm here today with stand-up comedian Tom Ward. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Harriet.
I liked your pause. I liked this, made it listeners feel like he's not there. I just invented it.
I'm always slightly behind the beat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have you always been like that?
I would imagine so, yeah.
So is it hard to know? Yeah, it's not like... Were you like that at school?
I think I always try and grab a little moment to just get it right.
That's really sweet.
Yeah, just a half a second.
A half a second. So it's not that you're not, like, paying attention. It's like, it's because you're paying more
attention.
Yeah,
too much.
Too much.
Yeah.
So, Tom.
Hello.
Who are we remembering today?
My father, Tim.
Tim?
Yeah.
When did Tim die?
2006. This week.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a terrible master. What, you come at 11?
11 years, yeah.
So this would be your 11-year anniversary this week.
Yeah.
As it... Oh, my God. It's Friday.
It's Friday. It was Wednesday.
So you've had it already on Wednesday.
Yeah.
How was the anniversary?
It was all right. I was actually not sure that it was the anniversary. I was just walking around the day before thinking, this is the time of year, isn't it? And then my brother messaged me saying, 11 years today. And then
wow.
I was like, oh, I was kind of in the diary to see my mum that night anyway. So I was like, oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good coincidence.
Is your brother older or younger?
Younger.
And is the two of you?
There's three of us.
There's three of you?
Yeah.
And I want to get the picture. Is that an old, are you in the middle or?
Yeah, I'm in the middle. He's 28, I'm 35, and my sister's 39, and they both live abroad.
Do you find that you often don't remember the date? Or like, because I always remember the date very clearly, but my brother doesn't. And I often, as far as I'm wondering, I often have to message my older brother to be like, by the way, it's today.
Yeah, because your father died when you were 15.
Yeah, so my dad died when I was 15.
Yeah.
And for me, the date is like burned into my memory, but my brother will be like, oh yeah, oh, I knew it was around this time. And I'm like, how can you not know the exact, like, to me? But do you have the same thing of like, you just...
I think so. I think dates, it takes me a while to get them. It's the same, I've had it with girlfriends on anniversaries and waking up.
Yeah, it's not popular, is it?
My first love, Giselle, she never forgave me. We woke up one morning and I think it was our first anniversary, and she had a card for me and some sort of beautifully girly present that she'd made and drawn and sewn and ribboned and all the rest, glitter popping out when you open it, everything. And I was like, oh no. And then I ran to the shop and bought four anniversary cards. And I thought, well, this will do it.
That'll
just give me a minute. So I went into another room and just wrote four different... No.
No.
I was 22. I didn't know anything.
So 11 years.
Yeah.
How are you feeling 11 years? Are you feeling like it feels very far away, or are you feeling like it's still quite present?
It does feel a long way away now. But actually, because I knew I was coming on here, I sat and listened to your other episodes and also thought about him deliberately.
Yeah.
And started to hear the answers of the other people you've had on and start to sort of channel the questions into my own thing. And I just, immediately the emotion came back. It was very, very real, very, almost like it's there waiting.
Yes.
A sort of storage box.
Yeah,
and you can just get the key, open it out, and there it all is. Nothing's changed. It's there. It's just the box is maybe moved to another department now, and you have to walk down a few more corridors to get to it.
Yeah.
But it's not changed. It's interesting how I found I can tap into the tragedy of his life or the tragedy of his underachievement or things like that, where you go, oh man, that came up rather than the death itself, the sort of
that's interesting.
His life and how he'd not quite allowed himself to be himself.
Yeah. I know what you mean, because I often, people who come on the show often, it seems to be around 2 or 3 years sometimes, and And you can see sometimes when they see that you're still talking about, they're like, oh God, am I still going to be upset?
Yeah.
And it's really hard to explain. No, you just, it's just like you said, it's just further away. You can get on with your life very easily, but the pain will obviously always be that pain. It's not like, oh, I feel fine now. Like, no. So that's interesting. You were talking about his life in a way more than his death. How did he die? Let's start there.
He got a brain tumour, and then he was not around long. He was only around like 8 months, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was he sick beforehand, or were they?
No. There was it hadn't been there a year before.
Right.
So they did a brain scan the year before because he'd had a funny turn.
Okay.
And so no, there was no sign of it. So it was quite rapid.
So, and how old were you? Sorry, just
I was 24.
So you were 24.
And he was 59.
Yeah, which is young.
Yeah, he's young.
It is young. So they told him he had a brain tumour. Did they then treat it?
Yeah, they treated it aggressively. That's what they said.
Right.
Which is a good word. but they said that it was, it was untreatable, they
right.
said. Yeah.
So he just kind of deteriorated and
yeah.
just got worse?
Yeah, he was quite fragile quite quickly, and then he was in a hospice. I don't know, he was in and out of hospital for a while and staying with us, and then he was in a hospice for the last 3 months.
Right, wow.
Which is quite long by some
that
standards.
It's quite long for hospice, yeah. You get the feeling with hospices they're sort of expecting a quick turnaround.
Right, yeah, a couple of weeks in you come, let's get this over with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was the hospice near you, like near where you were living?
It wasn't far away. It was in Weybridge.
Okay, yeah.
So I didn't have any association with Weybridge, so I was happy to leave my shit there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Weybridge, all right, that's fine. That's one town. It's never going to be my favourite place.
Yeah.
But I probably wouldn't spend any time there anyway.
It wasn't ruined for you.
No, it wasn't.
You didn't
ruin
Weybridge.
It was already, yeah, it was nothing to me. Weybridge. Yeah. It's like an Ultravox song.
Were you at uni or back from?
No,
I wasn't.
I wasn't at uni. I hadn't done uni. I was working in a charity shop because I'd sort of not quite found my feet yet because I'd dropped out of college a few years earlier and was just sort of moving from job to job, and I just started working at a charity shop and it had become my obsession.
Wow.
I loved it so much. It was in Fulham, North End Road, and I was just mad into it. Every day I was there.
What charity was it?
FARA. It's for Romanian orphans. Obviously a subject close to my heart, from New Malden. And I was just really obsessed with that, and you know, treating it like if I had a point to prove,
right?
Because you know, I'd been the underachieving son, and
okay.
I was like, right, I'll show him. I've got a girlfriend now. I've forgotten her anniversary. Never mind. I've got a job. So yeah. So I'd be going from the shop to the hospital to visit him.
About that time, do you remember feeling like you understood what was happening, or you'd accepted, or was it kind of a bit of a blur, like you were just kind of getting through it?
I don't know if I accepted it too quickly. I don't think I was in some sort of terrible denial. I think we were all kind of unsurprised in a way, because the nature of the illness somehow reflected him.
What do you mean by that?
It's sort of, he had a brain tumour, but he was a kind of very muddled, overly in his head person who was always stressed and very religious, but also kind of at odds with himself about that. And so he'd never been settled as a person. So it felt somehow right that he would get ill in his head.
Yeah.
It reflected how he was, how he lived anyway. So yeah, I don't think any of us were like, oh God, why, how? Do you know what I mean? When someone has a certain tragic quality to them, or frustrated or split in their character, you're almost not surprised when they become ill.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My dad was a very fiery person, and it was all like in his liver and his pancreas, and I know exactly what I mean. Like there was too much fire in that man's belly.
Yeah, right.
definitely. And so yeah, the way he got ill. Well, there's a lot of people who believe that, don't they? But obviously, not your personality, but how you view the world and your relationship with the world can affect you physically. There's also a lot of people who think it's bullshit, but I don't know. I can see there's, like you said, there's a sort of poetic truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have a good relationship with him? Or you're talking about he thought you were underachieving?
I don't think he did. I think because he was similar in a lot of ways, because he dropped out of college when he was 17 and he hated school and he had a difficult time.
Mm.
He was not disappointed. He wanted me to be an accountant. He was an accountant.
Okay, I was going to say, just randomly, like, accountancy, my boy.
But he was not a happy accountant, so it was strange that he just wanted me to have a profession.
Right.
And he talked about, you know, if you don't have something by the time you're 30, you're a bit fucked, you know. And I was like, okay, well, I'm 22, so that's...
Yeah, that's plenty of time.
I've got loads of, like, 8 years party time.
Yeah,
we got on well. We were close, but in a sort of dysfunctional way, because he was very Christian, born-again Christian. And
so he was born again? So how old were you when that happened?
I was 3, so I didn't really know much about it until I was about 7. And he'd started to become more and more religious as I got older. And he converted my mum into it as well, and she was a Catholic. And people are like, what's the difference? Well, it just sort of, it is a difference.
It's
you remove some things, you gain some others. It's like
you get some stuff, you get more perfume and oil and smoke in your ceremonies.
In the Catholicism.
In the Catholicism, yeah. So you lose that, sorry.
Yeah, and the statues. They're all gone. Yeah, you lose that, yeah. Pagan. Mary, you don't really mention Mary much.
Yeah, it's true, she gets kicked right out.
Yeah. So yeah, the font's quite different on the little on the little maxims.
So what kind of Christian was he then when he became born again? Was he like evangelical or?
He was Baptist.
Baptist,
and,
right? Okay.
Yeah. So that was there, and when you're a kid, you're obviously susceptible to whatever your parents are telling you.
Yeah,
And open, completely open. But gradually, you know, me and my sister, and then later my brother all rejected it, and obviously that creates quite a rift.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of love there, but it's compromised. There's an ideological wedge.
Especially if someone's very religious, because obviously their feeling is that you're going to be in pain in the afterlife. Like that they feel like they're saving your soul. So when you reject that, it's almost for your point of view is like, no, I've realised it's not for me, but they're like, you will go to hell.
Yeah, but maybe you could just pretend.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Just come along and say the words,
like,
which I did, which we all did to a degree, said the words. But I think a lot of people in churches are just saying the words.
Yeah.
If I say the words, then I'll avoid the bad thing. And it's like, well, I don't think that's what God would want.
It is tricky, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't think that's what the Bible's about. Do you know what I mean? Just say the words.
Say the words. Don't think about it.
Yeah, I feel nothing in my heart. But, heart, what are hearts anyway? We don't need that.
No, don't need that. That's not what God put us here for. So why did he become extremely religious? Was there like a thing like, that happened to him? Or he just sort of very just...
I think he was searching for something. I guess everyone is. But he dabbled with a bit of, you know, transcendental meditation. And
oh, yeah, my dad too.
Mm.
Yeah? Yeah, he was very into lots of weird stuff, yeah.
Yeah, was he into that at the end as well?
Well, it's funny because he was always searching for something, but he didn't go down the religious route. He went down sort of incredibly hippie self-help route.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's interesting that I've never really thought about that, because he could have easily been Christianity. If you know what I mean? He just didn't go there because I guess he was raised in sort of, well, Church of England, you know, a very sort of traditional public school English way. So I think that's why he wouldn't have ended up there, but he definitely ended up in an equally cultish situation.
Yeah,
I think it's when you're looking for something, isn't it?
Yeah.
So was he very religious at the end when he was dying?
Yeah, but not in a... He was obviously on drugs.
Yeah.
Legal drugs. I mean, from the hospital, yeah.
Yeah, my dad was on the illegal kind at the end.
Was it? Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it's part of a hippie commune, and you've got to be really... It's against the ethos.
Yeah, it would be rude not to.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You get kicked out. Yeah, he was on the drugs, and I think he wasn't bashing us about with it, or I think he was just quite relieved actually not to be in evangelical mode, not to be to have people coming to him, because he'd always felt the pressure to be going into other people's lives and trying to tell them about Jesus and hell and saving themselves, and that was very important to him. So to be in a position where he was incapacitated, finally free from his duties.
Wow.
I suspect that was part of the relief for him.
So he was very much at that church where you have to go out and share the word.
Yeah, he felt that pressure. He really did. And he didn't mind upsetting people, offending people. He'd fallen out with relatives. He'd fallen out with his father.
Wow.
He'd fallen out with my mum's entire family.
Oh, because they were all Catholic.
They were Catholic. They were not impressed. And that took a long time to get anywhere near healing, you know, that rift. So he was probably, I think he was quite relieved just to be bedbound and have nurses being kind to him. And there was a cat at the hospice, and
nice
to have people visiting him and saying, hey, I'm a friend and all is forgiven, and let's forget anything that went between us.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I suppose if you are religious in that way where it's quite aggressive is the wrong word, isn't it? I guess passionate or something. That when you're ill, there's a sort of, I guess, there's a piousness about the ill, and the ill don't need to convert, and the ill can rest. So perhaps he did feel like, like you said, finally he could just be at peace with himself, because it wasn't a sin to just be sitting down.
Yeah, he was ill. He also had a brain tumor, which I think was leaning into his nature to a degree. Yeah. He became a bit muddled.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't think you're not thinking in the same way.
Yeah.
By virtue of having something in the way.
Yeah, my father-in-law had a brain tumour. Mm. And it's strange, isn't it? Because the change is very subtle, but there's definitely a change there, isn't there? Because, of course, it's affecting what the bit that makes you, you, you.
Yeah.
How was that last 8 months then? Did you feel like you got to spend time with him and sort of have those moments? People, you know, talk about the moment. Did you feel like you got that, because 8 months is a little bit longer?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We got some lovely moments. Yeah, Christmas 2015 was good, because Christmas had been a real sticking point for us as a family, because he was...
Of course.
He was anti-Christmas.
Oh, he was one of those Christians.
Yeah.
You think that's so sad.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, but this is your festival.
Yeah, yeah. But I think he felt like it wasn't anymore. Yeah. It had been misappropriated.
Yeah.
I think in the first place, I feel like he felt that. But then even the more commercialism and all the rest. But so Christmas had actually been banned from our house in the 90s for quite a long time.
Oh,
most of the 90s, we didn't really have Christmas. And if there was any whiff of Christmas, it was done with a kind of... Oh, okay, well, you have some presents, but we're not making a deal of it. And he'd go off into the office and work on the day itself. And
oh, wow.
So we had a Christmas where all of that was like, oh, bollocks to it, let's have Christmas. I'm going to die. Yeah. Let's just do it. So we had a really nice Christmas where there was a tree and presents and all the food and family were there. And yeah, that was great.
So he was alive for that Christmas?
Yeah. Yeah, 2015 and then 2005.
2005, sorry. Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. 2005 and 2006 was when he died, but
right.
Yeah, that was lovely. There was plenty of moments where love was shared without it needing to be said. So there'd be, I'd rub his head because all his hair had fallen out. He didn't have much hair anyway. He had two patches, mad scientist kind of, and he looked really handsome and his hair fell out. He was bald. He looked, oh, hello, good looking man, because he'd always gone on about how good looking he'd been. And how dashing he'd been and how much success he'd had with women.
Yeah.
It's really inappropriate.
No, that's right.
And then he'd be guilty about it as well. So in the next sentence, oh, you know, it's bad, it's sinful, I shouldn't have... I feel terrible about... Oh, there was lots of women. So which one is it, Dad? Come on.
That's so funny. So like the younger him was sort of...
Bit of a player.
Coming out, yeah.
Yeah, and then he married my mum, and then I think he carried on playing for a while.
Yeah.
And then he weaned it off, you know... but he looked good. He looked handsome, and I'd sort of rub cream into his head and take him outside in the sun. There was moments of, you know, beautiful moments without us having to him having to say, "I'm sorry, son, for the things and scaring you when you were 12 and 13." And I'd be, "It's all right, Dad." You know, it was just kind of understood. We loved each other anyway, so it was complicated, but it was said and unsaid. You know,
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's really complicated. Like, we often talk about there isn't really a moment, because the relationship you have with a parent is so complicated that for them just to be like, oh, by the way, I'm sorry. It's like, for what?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Where do you want to begin?
Yeah, list
and
it.
How can I be sorry for all the things all the shit I've done to you? Like, it's so much more than that. Were you with him when he died?
I was there the night before, and then we went home, and then we were told to come in, and we were on the way to the hospice, and we rang in the car. On the motorway. But I'd spent a lot of time with him. I'd been in the hospice with him on my own, sort of by his bed. So I think I was the last person he saw, because he woke up after a week and then looked at me. I was there. I was there waiting, you know. I was like, oh, Dad. And he looked at me and he smiled and said, "My wife." I was like, all right, Dad, fucking hell. We had a little moment there, nearly, you know.
But it's funny though, because sometimes... my father-in-law's had this with the muddle. What I wondered what he meant was, oh, you're someone I love, but they just say my wife, because it's like, well, that's the only thing I can say right now. I know that look, though. My dad did that a couple of times asleep, and then that fucking fierce eyes open look at you, and you're like, what? What should I do? And they just look, and then eyes close again, and you think, did that happen? Should I have done more? But it's just like a really tiny little connection still left, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, so you were on the motorway and you got there. When you got there, did you go and see his body? Or?
Yeah.
How was that?
It's very odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very odd. Shocking. Mm. Sort of nothing can really prepare you. I hate to say something so cliche.
No, it's true, yeah.
Yeah, you get in there and the body's cold. I mean, it was still slightly warm. And I just sort of, I broke down pretty heavily. It was very, very shocking, yeah. But I was glad that I was, you know, I've always been quite good at crying.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, like,
that's helpful for grief.
Yeah, I've had girlfriends where I try and hide it, you know, just because I want to be butch or whatever. I've got, you know, I want them to think I'm really butch and in control. And it gets more and more sort of pathetic, I think, if you're hiding. I was in a psychiatric ward when I was a teenager, and I tried to pretend to be cool so that the girls would fancy me. So I'm in a psychiatric ward. Something has gone wrong here. And I was being cool in group therapy, not trying not to say too much, you know, leaning on the chair next to me, you know. Just being like, oh, so open up about problems. But no, I'm all right, you know, I'm okay. You know?
I'm cool, guys.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's fine, you know. But I didn't have the guts to ask any of them out. So it was like the beautiful sweet spot of being the cool guy. The cool guy with the vibes.
They must have been like, he's so mysterious. He's in a psychiatric ward, but he's still rocking it. Like, yeah, what is his deal?
I did feel quite cool compared to some of the others. I did feel pretty in control. You know. So, yeah,
I've always been incredible. But I totally know. I totally understand where you come from, because there's always a bit of you that wants to be cool. Doesn't matter where you are. You want to make sure you're not a complete fucking wreck.
I'm trying to wean out the desire to be cool from my character. You know, just to show it all. Be yourself, man. People always say that. Be yourself. It's like no. I'll do a bit of that. You know, I'll dabble with it.
I always think when they say that, it's like, well, have you met myself? I don't know if I should be. I don't know. I'm kind of protecting everyone. You know, I've developed a lot of layers which make it easier to be around me.
Yeah, like, it's for you. It's for everyone.
It's for you. It's not for me.
Yeah.
I think, was that your, I mean, stupid question, but was that the first dead body you'd seen?
Yes.
Yeah. It is very shocking. I think I've seen a few now, and not to brag, humble brag. And what I found was very shocking is my dad was a very, like, very energetic, loud person. And I was saying this, I've said this before in the podcast, like, he just knew he was in the room. He ate very loudly, just talked very loudly, breathed very loudly. And to see him just sort of, it was just so much quiet and stillness, which I don't think I'd ever really seen him be that still. So it was very, that's what's shocking is.
So that was almost loud itself.
Yeah. It was very loud that he wasn't being loud.
Yeah.
And not moving. And he was just moving and talking and thinking. And, you know, very like, come on, we're going to do this. Everybody get together.
Yeah.
So, it was just someone being still was really like. And it's amazing how, you know, I think if you don't know it, you think, oh, well, I guess they look asleep. It's like, no, they don't. There's something completely, there's something gone. There's something not there. It's very strange. Did he have a very religious funeral?
Church funeral.
Yeah.
Not extremely religious.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be. But, it was just a standard funeral. It was in a church. We wanted it to be at another church, but the priest refused to play the shadows because my dad loved the shadows.
Oh, no.
And the priest was like, no, it's the worldly music. And da-da-da. So the first priest said no, and we found a church in New Malden, which was where we lived, so that was fine, and they played the shadows.
I can't believe he would, like, of all the music to reject, the shadows is not like death metal, is it?
Yeah, no, it's very innocent.
So innocent.
Yeah, though, you know, some people would say those guitars, that was the beginning. Once the hips started to move, that's when, you know, the devil's work was being done.
Yeah, so you don't want to play the prologue to the devil's
work.
That's
right, the precursor to the modern world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just an awe. I don't think I went to the burial. And strangely, there's no gravestone.
Oh, right.
It's just, he's just under some grass. And we don't know, we can go and ask the man at the site where the grass is. But my mum has never got the stone put down. And I was like, are you in denial?
Yeah.
Because she's not moved on, she's not met anyone else. And she was never with anyone else before.
Wow.
I say with in the biblical sense.
Right, okay, yeah.
So she was a one-man woman.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that gravestone... Maybe she can't afford it. I don't know. Maybe there's a reason, but people get gravestones, don't they?
Well, yeah. My dad was cremated, but my mum had his ashes in the wardrobe for about 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think people think, oh, it's just tidied away. Like, not always. So he was in the wardrobe for a long time. And then eventually she was like, I think we should do something. But same thing. She's never remarried and didn't move on.
Hmm.
She listens to this, so not that you didn't move on, but like,
yeah,
like she never met anyone else. Mm-hmm. So I guess, if you have to meet someone else, maybe you do have to have that conversation of why isn't there a gravestone? But if it's just you and the kids, it's like, well, okay, fine, that's what mum's doing.
Yeah.
Have you been back to visit there? Or
I've been once.
Been once.
Early on.
And how was that? Like, how comes you decided not to go again? Do you just think...
I don't feel the need.
Yeah.
I don't like Kingston.
Fair play.
I don't want to be in Kingston. Yeah. I don't want to be on a bus on the way through Kingston.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably because I don't like Kingston. Though that, my, you know, a therapist would probably say, "Well, we need to talk about that." Yeah. It's Kingston is taking the brunt for some other deeper thing. So yeah, I don't feel the need to stand there because there's other places, you know, that have him in it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like the garden, he had his office because he downsized a lot over the years. He used to be in a massive office in Raynes Park, and then he couldn't keep the rent going and blah, 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 and there was downsizing. In the end, it was just him and a secretary in the garden. I mean, in a hut, in a garage that he'd had converted into an office.
Wow.
So I can go in there.
Yeah.
If I want to be near something that he was in.
My dad, same thing, worked from home, but it was just him in the spare room.
Right, right.
And we had to answer the phone as if it was the office.
Yeah,
and pretend we were his secretary. And he'd, like, from the age of six, I knew how to be like, "And who's calling? And can I take a message? And what? Would you like him to call you back?" Because he was like, "You've got to pretend there's an office here. It's not just me, guys." But yeah,
you've
I know
got
what
you
mean.
The youngest secretary ever, people are thinking. Like,
I must have sounded six. Like, yeah. I remember at the time thinking, "Oh yeah, they bought that." But they obviously must have thought, "That's a small child pretending."
Hello.
Yeah. Okay. He'll be back later. He's just at transcendental meditation. Like,
he's just smoking a fat one.
Yeah.
Out the back.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, yeah, I know what you mean about we don't have a place that we go to. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, I mean, I suppose why you don't have to have a gravestone, do you? Like, you don't have to. It's...
No. My sister toyed with words, what the words would say.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think it's any slight on the grief or proof of anything.
I think it really is so personal. And I think if, you know, if different religions have different ways of marking it or, you know, if you've had, keeping the ashes, it's just whatever works for that family unit.
Yeah.
When did you get into comedy? So was that like, were you already in comedy when he was ill or?
No, I was really wanting to be in a band, actually.
Oh.
And that was my dream. Ever since I'd left the church, I'd become a real dreamer. And I just used to watch live concerts on video all the time, pop videos constantly, and just dream of being a rock star.
Could you play guitar?
No.
You just wanted to be in a band?
I thought I wanted to sing. So I just started writing poems and songs when I was about 15. So when he was ill, I was already thinking, all right, I've got to move this on. And when he died, I just went obsessively into learning guitar and started writing songs more, and I looked for a band, but I knew I needed a demo, so I spent a year saving up to go to America so that I could record and just be away. I wasn't in comedy until five more years. For a year I was like, oh, I love music, I want to be a musician, and then it gradually dawned on me that I didn't actually want to be a singer. I just, the idea of it had been the thing that I was into.
Yeah.
And the actual reality of it was very different. And I wanted people to be listening to the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I used to write about death and love and loss and stuff, but from a kind of fun point of view, not heavy.
Yeah.
Like a Leonard Cohen, that's come up on your podcast before, but Leonard Cohen, later Leonard Cohen, 90s Leonard Cohen, I love it so much. We used to listen to it in the car on the way to the hospice.
Oh, wow, that's hardcore.
It's kind of dystopian, tongue-in-cheek, kind of, it's all about sex and politics and religion, and he's definitely got a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
And I always love that. I look for that in a vocalist.
Yeah.
Someone who kind of sees the joke.
Yeah.
Isn't afraid to talk about heavy things.
Yeah,
but they're
rather
not,
than the earnest, the po-facedness of loss and sadness.
Yeah. So I really wanted that to be heard and shared, and but so comedy felt right for that because it's just one man and a mic.
Yeah, that is, I mean, I think that's how a lot of comedians end up. There's like, you try a lot of other things, you realize it's kind of better when it's just me saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not very good at working in a group.
Yeah. Give it to me.
Yes, I know what it should be.
Stop it.
And did you feel like your sense of humor, I mean, obviously I don't think this happened to me in a way, but like, did you feel like it had been influenced by what happened to you? Do you feel like there was a level of dark humour, or like there were subjects that you were more willing to joke about perhaps? Or did you feel like it was completely developed before your dad?
I don't know. I feel like the the upbringing stuff had already put in place quite a...
Yeah, that's quite a lot, isn't it? You've already got quite a lot of material there.
Yeah, so I think death cemented it in a way to be like, all right, not only has these weird things happened where I was really badly affected by them and very unwell for a long time, now the person that I had the closest bond with within that is dead. So I feel like that was definitely part of a new beginning, a closure on something, as much as there can be closure. I'm sure it was part of the mix, but I feel like the original tone was already there.
Yeah.
Of feeling like outside and seeing that everything's a bit stupid, but also being at the mercy of those stupid things and trying to cope with life.
So are you very affected by the religious upbringing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that it's because I used to be very anxious as a teenager as a result of the fear.
Yeah.
Because the fear was such an important part of the doctrine.
Yeah.
So it took, for a long time after, there was this thing of finding a way to survive rather than I wasn't springing from a... I didn't feel like I was in a privileged position, at least in that regard. Mm. So there was a kind of staying above water, and then how can we push on from just surviving?
Yeah.
So the charity shop was surviving, and then after that, okay, we're starting to now... We're beyond surviving. We're now succeeding in something.
Yeah.
And then... So the religion really affected me a lot, for sure, yeah.
Did his death... Because I suffer from anxiety, and I think I was... anxious anyway, but then when my dad died, it was like, oh my, well, I was a bit worried, and then look what happened. Like, now I realize the world is not safe.
Yeah.
Like, did it turn up your anxiety very loudly for a bit, having something like that happen, or did it actually sort of cancel it?
I don't think it added to the anxiety. I don't think it did. I didn't notice any particular change in that regard. I find global events have more of an effect on that, or reading the news, or being at a party, a house party where there's not enough people that know me or like me.
Oh, house parties.
For me to feel loved and safe.
I think house parties must be like the worst night for anyone with anxiety. Like, to me, even you saying that makes me think,
house party.
House party. Oh, which is why at house parties, I was the girl in the bathroom smoking out the window talking about death with someone. Because then it was like, it's like this now. Like, I can cope with that. Like, a whole room of people. Like,
I was always looking for the one person that I could talk about death with.
Yeah, go on.
And someone to sit with and say, oh, this is a load of bollocks, isn't it? These people are so fake.
They're so fucking cheap, man. They've got no fucking idea.
Yeah.
I tell you what, have you listened to any Bob Dylan?
That's what my story's like. I don't know about music.
Yeah.
I listen to Oasis. I'm listening to Talking Heads now.
Oh my God, yeah, I was really into Jefferson Airplane, which, I mean, I tell you what, being into Jefferson Airplane and Joni Mitchell at a party where everyone's playing like Sweet Like Chocolate Boy, you're like, it really does make you feel very lonely.
Yeah, it's like a camera lens pulls out and it's just like, oh God, I've got to do this for now, have I?
Yeah, and everyone in the room seems to think this is a good idea and I'm the only one who doesn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, finding that one person. I was really good at finding, I would have found you.
You're looking for it. Yeah. Where's the slightly sad, disillusioned person with the strange hair?
Yeah.
I because I had a year off school when I was 14, 15, I'd occasionally turn up at house parties. I would be invited, but I would so uncomfortable socially and didn't know how to do it, how to be a teenager.
Yeah.
So I was just leaving the church where you're basically told that it's all a sin, it's all weird, don't be popular, blah, blah, blah. So suddenly I turn up drunk on Alka-Pops and like lean out of windows and sort of I'd be odd, be really odd.
Yeah.
But at the same time, be funny. So there'd be girls and there'd be fun stuff and then I'd turn weird. I'd have one too many hooch.
It was always the hooch of the Cardi Breezers that got you.
And then it would all pour out. Yeah. My actual... the preoccupations would be pouring out, and they would be, oh God, we're going to hell, you know. But I wouldn't say that, but it would be implicit somehow in this kind of fatalistic. And there sometimes wouldn't be someone to have that dialogue with.
Yeah, that was the really hard parties, wasn't it? When you didn't find someone, you were like, oh, it's just me and I'm crying. I woke up holding a bottle of Archers, like, I'm not okay. Yeah, God. So that's interesting that you felt like it didn't, the death. I wonder if, like you said, because he had brought this religion into your family, that maybe his death, there was a peace rather than upping the anxiety, there was a peace to it.
I think that's a good point. because he was so unsettled all along, and as a result, unsettling. His effect was unsettling, and he was in debt, and he was driving himself into the ground, really, to try and keep his business going, and he didn't use computers.
Oh.
An accountant who didn't use computers.
Yeah.
And he was using pens and paper and, you know, Tippex.
Like lost in the wrong part of the century.
Yeah, yeah. And it, that time had passed, and I feel like there was perhaps relief for him and also relief. We weren't glad to see him go, obviously, but somehow it felt like, he's no longer in that tailspin of madness. He's now out of that.
Yeah.
So there was perhaps some relief for him.
Yeah, and I know what you mean. It's not like, I think, again, it's hard to understand if you haven't had it. You're not glad. You're not like, woo.
Yeah.
But if someone can be at peace when they haven't been, if you can find some light in it, there is something in that of going, oh, well, I guess that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, it must have been. So immediately after, so you went to do music and then you eventually ended up comedy. What do you think he would have thought about the comedy? Have you ever thought about that, like his relationship with something so frivolous and silly? And
I don't think he would have judged it for being frivolous or silly, because he loved silliness, and I think he craved a simpler life. I think he would have been really pleased that I found something.
Yeah, a profession.
For so long, you know, there was nothing, or there was the promise of certain things. And so when I was 24, I was still quite new to the charity shop, and I was doing really well there. But to see me doing something I absolutely love, I'm sure he would have been really pleased. I wouldn't want either of them to have come, and that goes for my mum now, because of the things. It's like a freedom to be able to say what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, to talk through sometimes difficult things and difficult relationships from including them. And if I feel that they're there, then that would be different. And also, he would presumably have thought certain bits of it were blasphemous.
Yeah.
Or taking the piss out of God, or taking the piss out of his God, or chipping away at the credibility of the church, or something like that. And that may be something I need to do occasionally, take the piss out of it.
And yeah, well, so, especially if you've been brought up around so much of it. Of course, the way out of it is humour.
Yeah.
To sort of break free of it slightly and pop the balloon that has been scaring you, of course.
Yeah, because my mum said to my sister the other day, oh, well, homosexuality is a sin, darling, and just passed through on the way somewhere else. And my sister was so appalled by this that she just then had to mention it to every friend. She didn't bring it up. She'd just be talking to a friend. Oh, homosexuality is a sin, by the way. And then just move through to the next subject and out of context. And it's just like that was her way of just releasing the pressure valve.
Yeah.
Because if it's, instead of exploding or being furious with the person, you then just, all right, I've got to get this out somehow.
Yeah.
And that's what comedy is.
Yeah, you have to get it out somehow.
And we're lucky because we can say it on the day. Something happens, we can go and say it on stage.
Yeah. And I definitely think, even if, I think it's it's actually quite healthy, even though there's this, my therapist has an argument about, you know, like, oh, you're using humour to hide it. I also think there's a healthiness of, like, it doesn't sit in you, which I think I've definitely met people in my life where you thought, God, you haven't even opened the box. You don't even know where the box is. You haven't even know where you put it in storage.
Yeah.
At least I know it's in storage. I know I'm paying for it weekly.
Yeah.
Like, I know where it is. And that's something that comedy allows you to do.
Mm.
Which is, you know, a lifesaver to so many people. So you're saying you've had this 11-year anniversary and you're thinking about his unfulfilled life.
Yeah.
Is that what happened over time? Have you sort of felt you were able to sort of look at him more as a person than a father? I've definitely had that. I don't know if you had, like, you start seeing them more, if I met them as a person, that's what I would think, rather than, like, oh, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you feel?
I think so, yeah. I think you pull back slowly over time, and you become the same age that they were at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know my dad when he was 35, but you start to see what it is like to be 35 and then 40, 45, whatever, and go, oh, okay, so yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy getting it right.
No, I definitely think that as you get older, you start to really definitely feel, I feel a lot of empathy for my parents.
Like, and now you're a mother, is that, is that coming up more?
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely because having a baby, being a mother, there's often times you're like, what the fuck am I? I don't know what I'm doing. Mm. It's a mentor. And I remember often, well, not often, every now and again looking at my parents thinking, you don't know what you're doing. Why don't you know what you're doing? Mm. And now I think, oh yeah, they didn't.
Yeah.
But I remember as a child finding that very affronting.
Yeah.
Why don't you know? That's your job. And then when you're the parent, you're like, so many times you don't know what you're doing. But of course you don't. Why? You don't come with a manual. No one sat me down and explained that. You're just making this shit up as you go along.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely made me a lot more empathetic and understanding of that position.
Yeah.
And is that because you said you felt like he had this life unfulfilled? Do you feel like you've understood perhaps where that life came from more now you're older?
I think so. I think you kind of delve a little bit and you kind of go, well, how did this happen? Why were you like this? Same with my mum. Why are you a strangely detached person? And why do you stick very heavily to almost automated responses to every scenario? And you can kind of chip away at it and go, right, what were you doing when you were 12? Oh, she was sent to England on her own.
Wow.
To go to boarding school.
Yeah.
You know, it's like from America, she's American. So it's like, okay, well, that explains potentially. I mean, yeah. You attach yourself to a story, don't you, somehow along the line. So I kind of go, well, why was my dad the way he was? But at the same time, you don't want to get too attached to a narrative because then it feels a bit like you ring it in. So what's the story? Well, he was 17 and then, but you kind of go, oh, yeah, you were at sea. Not literally, but you were 17 and you didn't like school and then your dad put pressure on you to get a thing back in the days where perhaps there was more pressure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
To have a career.
Yeah.
And it's like, you weren't an accountant. You didn't want to be an accountant.
Yeah.
And he had a big spirit and it was just compromised by societal pressures starting from home. And I was very glad that he didn't really put that much pressure on me. He kind of, I think they both decided not to bother.
Right, yeah.
Because they saw what I was like when I was 14, 15, saying, fuck this, I'm not doing your religion.
Yeah.
You can't control me. You know, so I think they both went, oh, okay, well, just let him see what he can do.
Yeah,
you know?
Just leave it.
Leave him be, you know. So, yeah, I think you do start to realise how people, where the split in people can occur. And it usually starts with parents or a parent shaming them or making them not feel okay about what they want to do or not knowing what they want to do.
I think especially that generation, I wonder, I mean, my dad was 44, but it's not, I think he probably would have, you know, similar age. And he wanted to be a filmmaker. And my grandpa was just like, no way, there's no way in hell.
Mm.
And then exactly the same happened with my brother, that my brother was like, oh, I'm not sure what to do. My dad was like, oh, you need a proper job. And my brother was like, but that's what your dad did. But I think it is hard to break that chain.
Yeah.
It's really hard to break that chain. And I think similar with my dad, he definitely wasn't doing what he wanted to do. He was very creative and passionate and he was working in sort of like marketing and PR because he'd ended up here as a businessman, literally. Like I still don't know what he did.
Mm.
Like I was like, I just say businessman. There was an office.
And you were his secretary.
Yeah, exactly. Classic secretary. No idea, but I know where he's supposed to be. And I think, it does break people a little bit if they're forced into not doing what they should be doing. Like you said, like he wasn't an accountant. That wasn't what that spirit was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So I think that's amazing that you've ended up very much following your spirit.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's why I love my dad so much, was because he had such a big spirit and such a natural kind of fuck you to a lot of things. And I feel like that's why we were so close, in spite of the fact there was this difference between us. We both have that, or had that thing of saying, no, you can't. Because his religion was a fuck you.
Yeah.
His job wasn't, but his religion was, and his refusal to engage with materialism.
Mm.
So he was, in one regard, trying to put us through the same educational facilities that he'd been through, that he was miserable in, which is weird. But at the same point, he was kind of saying, no, I don't agree with money. So there wasn't any money. And he was, I'm not into vanity, and he wasn't buying into the dream.
Yeah.
Whatever the dream is. He wasn't lost under the spell of a kind of lifestyle or status anxiety. He really wasn't, fundamentally. And obviously it's not entirely simple and clear, and there would have been some suffering as a result of seeing his friends doing very well. But he had a kind of rebellious streak, which I really loved. So he was, I think that's the when I say he was torn, it was those kinds of things, because he had, you know, the innate conservativeness of religion mixed with this desire to be free and do it on his own terms. And but I feel like that's rubbed off a lot.
Yeah, yeah, I can see, definitely. There's definitely, that makes a lot of sense. Having 11 years, which, you know, is a long time, do you ever get the feeling like you've changed so much from the person that he knew? Do you have that sort of, because you obviously have found what, you know, gone from working in a charity shop to being a successful comedian. Is there a sadness in that at all?
I don't think so. I think you, I don't know, you should be a bit more sure of yourself, you know, between 24 and 35. And I don't think he'd be confused by what he saw.
Oh, yeah, that's nice, yeah.
I don't think he'd be like, oh, what is this? I would never have guessed that my underachieving son would do some weird sideways career choice.
Yeah, yeah.
All about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would make sense.
So, yeah, I think he'd be cool. I think he'd be cool about it.
Is there anything that still sets you off now? Because I think as you get further away, it is easier. Like, I find, like, Father's Day still pisses me off, but it doesn't hurt. What more annoys me is, like, it's sort of just suddenly in your face, and you're like, oh, God, all right. Mm-hmm. Like, you suddenly get so many, like, 5 emails from something, companies you bought things from. You're like, why is everyone emailing me about Father's Day?
Yeah.
But it used to hurt, whereas now I can be like, oh, that's annoying. Do you feel like anything really still makes you go, ow?
I think it's more the relationships with those that are living that I actually grieve for more. I think the Father's Day thing doesn't hurt me so much. I notice it and go, oh, yeah, I don't have one. And it's like I'm almost insulted by the presumption in the advert.
Yeah,
Father's Day. Oh, I'm sorry. And they should have a little bracket. Sorry if this is little, if you lost one. you won't want this Killers or Paul Weller album. I think it's more like, grieving for the... Because losing a parent throws you into the family in a new way. You're kind of chucked back to the family that you're in, and the microscope is held over the relationships that last, that prevail, that are still there.
Yeah.
So I grieve more for the difficulties with getting on with my mum than I do for that, strangely. So it's more like, because I did have a heart connection with my dad.
Yeah.
But ever since then, I've been trying to get on with my mum. And that has been a problem for 20 years, predating it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, that is the relationship that I strangely grieve for more. But there are things that trigger it off, sure. Like, just getting ready for this, I was thinking about it more, as I said. And just remembering it and remembering that time.
Yeah, I think remembering a time when you were just so sad, isn't it? It's just like... Even doing this, I mean, I find it hard to do it all the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm talking about it a lot more than I ever used to.
Yeah.
And sort of remembering it, people ask you questions, you're like, oh, yeah, it was really sad, wasn't I? Like, yeah.
Are you looking for, because obviously by nature of this, are you looking for resolution somehow for the deaths that you've encountered, or to understand them, or to understand it through hearing other people? Or?
I do a lot of things without thinking about them. And that I definitely did this without thinking about it. I was like, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, let's not think about why we're doing it. And then I've realised, I obviously really needed to talk about it. And this was just such a great excuse to talk about my grief. And I think I hadn't really talked about it. I think I sort of thought I had, because you have those long conversations about death with people. And
At parties.
And I had talked to my mum and my brother about it a lot, but I sort of realised I don't think I... I sort of talked around it or talked about their grief, you know, which again I'm still doing. So I think I just sort of felt the need to talk about it, because I only went into counselling last year.
Okay.
Because because I was 15, so I just couldn't process how I would sit down and talk to someone, I think. So I sort of feel like I'm on catch up, because now I'm 34. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of things we need to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. Kind of came in a combination of getting pregnant. Yeah. Going to counselling and being like, it was like once I'd found the cup, I found the box, so that I had to show everybody the box.
Yeah, right.
Like you said with your sister saying that thing, it's like, oh, now I have to keep talking about it because I've just realised what happened to me. So now I can't shut up.
Yeah, yeah. The box is wide open.
The box is so open to the point I'm like, I need to close the box at least for a couple of days of the week because it is hard remembering it, definitely. Because you do, you know, you move on and it's hard to explain what that means to people, especially when I meet people at the beginning of the journey who are like, they can't imagine. You're like, if you're 2-3 years down the line, they're like, how will I stop thinking about it? Like, oh, you will. It doesn't mean you're not sad, but you just go a month without thinking about it.
Yeah.
2 months, I think. 6 months. And then, a year. And you're like, oh, I haven't really thought about it this year. Like,
yeah.
I definitely have, you know, like you said, anniversary, birthdays, Christmas. They're a little, you know, obviously Father's Day. And because I'm ridiculously subscribed to way too many mailing lists.
Yeah.
So there's things that set you off. But like I said, I think you just get better at going, oh, ow, okay, I'm all right. Mm-hmm. Whereas obviously 3 years in, it's like, ah, fuck. Like, it's way, way more painful.
Yeah, and the first year is a kind of, I don't know if you had this, it's almost like a numb thing. And then the second year is like, oh, shit, it's real.
Yeah.
It's actually real. There's almost like a honeymoon period on the grief early on.
Yeah, I think the first year's really awful, but what you don't realise is you're not really experiencing life.
Mm.
So you are numb and in shock and your body protects you, but it does still seem awful.
Yeah.
And then you said the second year, you're like, oh, I didn't realise how bad it actually was because I wasn't really feeling a lot of it.
Yeah.
And like your sensation comes back that second year. And I think, it's tough. The longer it goes on, it is tough as well because I think there's a slight like, well, what do I do with 11 years? What do I do with 19 years? Should I be sad? Should I, what should I be? You sort of have to, that's why I'm interested because I think, I haven't spoken to many people who've had a long gap. It's been quite recent, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was interested in 11 years. I remember that being, or 10, I think. I remember thinking 10 was quite like, wow, like a fucking decade is, numbers do have meanings even if you don't want them to.
Yeah. It's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, it's not a straightforward grief. It never has been. How to, the love for the parent and then the despair at what the parent said and did.
Yeah.
And then, but not being bitter.
Yeah.
Because bitterness is a kind of useless emotion.
Yeah.
Or whatever you call it. It's kind of dead-endy.
Yeah.
Going, oh, you did this. You're the reason. Because then you kind of go, well, but I'm the reason if I continue to be defined by this.
Yeah.
But I am defined by it, but I'm not going to be too defined by it.
Yeah.
I'm going to dabble with defining myself
by it. I'm going to be aware that I'm defined by it, but also not defined by the awareness.
Yeah, take the piss out of him for that. Take the piss out of the dogma that he was spouting. Take the piss out of myself for being a victim. Refuse to be a victim. You take the piss out of the fact that I'm a comedian, but really take comedy very seriously. It's like I'm juggling lots of balls here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of plates spinning.
Oh my God.
And none of it's real. It's all like everything is just the current emotion that you're in.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'm angry at my dad today. Next day, oh, I forgive him entirely. He was just a troubled soul. It's never simple. It's always...
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, especially, I think, if you've had a complicated relationship. I definitely had with my dad. It wasn't like, oh, he was just great and I was daddy's girl. I was literally not daddy's girl. Like, he once bought me a badge that said Daddy's Little Princess and I was like so offended.
Did you puke on it straight away?
I was just like... What?
This is not our narrative.
Yeah, what was like, what do you think's happening? Because that is not what's happening.
Yeah.
And it's hard if it's, I think grief, I'm sure if you have a very loving relationship and that's clear, it's still hard. But yeah, when it's complicated, like you said, some days you're so angry at them, you think, God, what a prick. And the other day you're like, no, he had a difficult life and that's why. And it just will always ebb and flow and change. Because as you said, you get older and you understand things slightly more and then see it from their point of view and then not see it from their point of view. Like, well, I'm 34 and I haven't behaved like that. Such an evolving thing. All you can do is keep talking, keep making sure you're not damaging yourself. And I think you're right. The bitterness is very unhelpful because I feel like that. I feel it just is how it is.
Mm.
He just sometimes was a prick. I can't change that. And I can't change my reaction. I was also sometimes a prick. So.
Yeah, it's worth remembering that we're all pricks.
Yeah, we are all, definitely.
That's why I love the Amy Winehouse film that came out a couple of years ago. Did you see it?
It made me bawl my eyes out.
Me too.
Jeez, yeah.
I didn't cry in front of the girl because I wanted to be Butch.
Of course.
I cried at home in the toilet when she'd gone downstairs to the kitchen.
That's way cooler.
Yeah, I also ate a pack of biscuits the day before in... on the edge of the bath because I didn't want her to know that I sometimes binge eat. So I would eat a whole pack of Bourbons in about 2 minutes and then just come back with, you know, hey.
Did you not like have like crumbs around
No,
you?
I washed my mouth out.
Clever. You're thinking. You're always thinking.
Yeah. The Amy Winehouse film reminded me of how slightly fucked everyone is, and yeah. And she was depicted as a flawed human, and we all are, and it's like so refreshing to see a documentary film where you go, oh, you were a bit out of order sometimes, oh, and you were also really lovable, oh, you were so down to earth, oh shit, you were really hard on that boy, you know, all of this stuff where you're like, oh, you're seeing all of it at once.
Yeah
I think that's so good to be reminded that we're all loyal, we're all betrayers, we're all kind, we're all nasty, we're all loving, we're all bitter, we're all devoted, we're all having doubts, sometimes all at once.
Yeah.
Just the current layer is the loudest. And it's really good to be reminded of that.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, because you can get so attached to, but they were the. It's like, well, yeah, but they were, but I'm also.
Yeah.
Everything that they are.
Yeah, and you are 50% of them. So you can't run that far from whatever you feel they did. It's like, yeah, it's somewhere. Of course, it's in your makeup. And that doesn't mean you have to be them or make the same choices that they did. But I agree with you, just remembering that we all fuck up occasionally. And that's okay. I think it makes your grief easier if you can find a peace with that.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I think it must be really, it's hard enough anyway. If you're carrying around that, I think, God, it must be really heavy if you're also carrying around, but they did this and they did that.
Yeah. And art is a great privilege because it allows you to process things.
Yeah.
And then do something.
Yeah.
With it. You know, whatever comes out, you know, it's quite unpredictable. But it's a great position to be in. And I do kind of go, oh, thanks, Dad. Thanks for fucking me up. Or thanks for being part of that process. Because I might have been a fuck up anyway.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily him.
No.
You know, but thanks for muddling me and confusing me, but also creating a space between me and the world, because I love that space.
Yeah.
I enjoy that space of arriving at a party. Sometimes being the outsider at a party is wonderful.
Yeah.
Sometimes I leave the party in tears because I feel so lonely.
Yeah.
But sometimes being the outsider, there's a great, you find your couch to sit on and you find your way and you don't have to say much, whatever it is. And sometimes you're very talkative and you can feel outside and inside at once. But I love that space that he gave me, or that occurred because of that childhood.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change that.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming in to talk to me. I think that's a good place.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thank you.
You can follow Tom on Twitter at Tom Ward Voice, and also if you go to his website, you can find out about where he's gigging, and he'll be in Edinburgh this year with his brand new show as well. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast, or email us thegriefcast@gmail.com. The show was produced by Kate Holland, and the music was provided by The Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.